Good morning, everybody. Thanks for getting up Thursday morning. I'm really happy. I didn't expect that many people. So, when I was flying over here, actually last Friday, I sat next to, I'm from Norway, so I flew first to London and then from London and here. I sat next to a guy called Christopher. He works in Telenor, which is one of my previous employers about 10 years ago. He actually works in the same division that I used to work in. And they had a huge 2013 project going for the last period of time. My team has also been working together with him on that and his colleagues. So we came up and we started talking about, you know, they had a lot of learnings. We're not going to talk about the project. We can do that another time. But had a lot of learnings on what they've done, what's the good things, what's the bad things. And sort of at the end, started asking, so how do you actually capture this? How do you make sure that you don't do the same mistakes again? And I guess that's why there's so many people here today. So we're not going to talk about knowledge management. That's a topic, I guess, everybody sort of familiar with the knowledge management, but I'm going to try to talk about, you know, how do we put these things together. Everybody's asking me the question, SharePoint or Yammer, so hopefully I'm going to give you a little bit of insights, at least what my thoughts are on that. I also had a meeting yesterday, or a couple of meetings with Bjørn Olstad. He's the CVP for Search and codename Oslo and the Office Graph, and he just told me that remember, if your room is full, it's about 350, 400, 500 people who actually listen to you for 1.5 hours. That's half a man year, so a lot of money. So I'm going to try to give you a session worth at least somewhere between $60,000 and $100,000, because that's what you're investing in me. So let's keep going. My name is Jan. A lot of things we're talking about here is social, so I think I want to let you know who I am. I'm from Norway, live in Oslo, or just outside Oslo. I'm heading up something called a Business Productivity Center of Excellence in Redmond. And there's a team that has business and technical architects and delivery resources trying to help the rest of Microsoft sort of enable and drive and act upon the vision that we have now around the changes we do see in business productivity. I used to work, as I told you, in Telenor and SAP as well for a while. Have a girlfriend, and we don't have any kids together, but we have three girls in total, 16, 18, and 21. So I'm traveling a lot to kind of get some peace. and as you can see, I like wine. Somebody like wondering where this is, it's Simfram Del from Robert Biala this summer. Excellent wine. So today I'm going to take you through about the next 70 minutes or so, a little bit knowledge management, trying to give you the background, a little bit introducing what I think about knowledge management and collaboration, trying to come up with some sort of definition, tying that towards the need. And I have a very cool customer reference case that I also want to share with you. Also a little bit about what different customers are doing. Talking about the approach that we're doing around solutions and so on, and trying to come up with the recommendations as well. I'm going to leave a little bit of time at the end for some Q&A. And if not, not able to do that, please come up to me as well. I'm going to be available for any discussions. So when do we learn? To start with that. And it's not going to be like a home improvement show, but this is my kitchen, and my girlfriend told me that we need to sort of do something just the white wall. So I wanted to have some tiles on the wall. And, well, obviously I took down the fan, and then this is from beginning to almost the end in less than 5 hours. So I was really proud. However, there is one sort of last step when you're doing this, and that's what I learned, it's called in English grouting or sealing, where you actually need to tighten between all the tiles. And usually I don't read instructions, but this is something I haven't ever done before, so I actually read instructions. I went on the internet and I searched, you know, do you have any videos how this is supposed to be done? I even read the instruction back on the package. And it tells you the process, and it basically tells you that you have 25 to 30 minutes to put the thing on the wall. And I'm kind of like the guy who just, okay, I'm going to do this as quickly as possible. So I throw it up on the wall. And, well, I think somewhere here it says that you have 20 to 30 minutes to get it on, and then you have 15 to 20 minutes before it becomes opaque. Or is, I don't know if that's how it's being pronounced. I don't know what that word means, or I didn't know what that word meant. So there is a couple of things here. First of all, it's actually, it's not 20 plus 15 or 20 to 30 plus 15 to 20. It's actually 25 minutes, and it's opaque. So the result you saw on the third picture was actually after the 5 hours. So it took me another 2.5 months to get rid of all of that thing. And I broke through 3 diamond drills and a couple of other things as well. So the thing is that you have all this information and you're trying to read it and try to capture it, but it becomes just a lot of information for me. And nobody really told me that this was an important thing to take away all the stuff you pulled up on the wall there. So I'm not admitting it's my fault, because I actually read the instructions. But I probably have to take part of it. So the thing is, when you read it, it's just a bunch of information. But when somebody actually explains it to you and gives it to you, it becomes knowledge. And I did this, I shared this on a knowledge management presentation I did for LexisNexis in London as well. And at the end, when I just did what I did with you now, I asked, so did it happen to anybody else? And actually 10 people raised their hand and said the same thing. So I don't know, did it happen to anyone else here? Ah, there is at least one. Thank you, I'm not alone. So, knowledge management. So that was kind of like a background. Knowledge management. It's about, you know, how you organize your intellectual resources and information inside your business environment. Obviously, what we want to make sure is that we want to create an environment where people are allowed to create documents or content and information and knowledge. We want them to be able to share it and distribute it and actually use it as well and enrich it. So how do we do these things? And I think that from a definition of knowledge management, that's a good way of defining it. There is a lot of different frameworks and theories when we talk about this. And even though I think knowledge management just appeared as a practice in the early 90s, already 2,600 years before Christ, they started to do libraries and figuring out how do we actually organize content in order to find it again. So it's not something new. So it's a good question why we're not able to get it right. There are different theories around this, and we do have some of them around the difference between tacit knowledge and explicit knowledge, and when you're actually able to make it something that somebody else can find. It's good that I have it in my head, but it doesn't really help you guys a lot. So how are we able to structure it, and how do we get there? One of the challenges we face is very often that you try to build these metadata hierarchies and structures and to support what you do in the business. And that's fine until your business changes and you have 250 million documents you want to reclassify. So you need to be smarter than that. You also have others which are looking into the content and relationship perspectives, where you're looking at how do we enrich the data with what people know about the data. And I think what you saw from the office graph and what was presented around Oslo, so even though what the app that you saw just was an example of a Windows 8 application, this is about how we're enabling those signals and those analytical things that are happening behind there. It's really in the sort of context of that. And the last one, which I just cited here, which is the knowledge spiral, is more about, you know, how do we evolve from having tacit knowledge in our heads to bring it into something that somebody we're sharing with somebody else. And it's evolving. We're creating some sort of cycle to get feedback, improve it, and create knowledge. So there's different theories about that. So that's one element I think that was important that we have and keep in our minds and heads today. Then it's about communication. A lot of communication that happens inside organization is one-to-one or one to somebody else. It's not a lot of dialogue. So there's a huge difference between communicating and sharing and collaborating. And I think that when you see, you can see this both in the sense of the communication-centric as well as content-centric, is that tend to very often be, hey, here's the, what you should use. And you don't think, take into consideration that they have specific needs. So if there is somebody actually needing a place to sit, there are still a couple of seats in the middle here. So unfortunately, most companies today have this one-to-one or one-to-many, where they're just pushing out a lot of information, mainly one way. There's a few dedicated subject matter experts that can contribute. And the roles, it's very defined on the roles, not the individual needs and tools. Everybody loves tools. So the question, I guess, a lot of you guys have, Yammer or SharePoint? We need to choose a tool. So I'm going to kind of disappoint you a little bit today because I'm not going to say either or. I'm going to show you a couple of examples of how you actually can do these things together. And one of the things you also see when you're doing this is that the way we communicate these portals, which are very static, very bringing very sort of one-way dialogue. You're not one-way dialogue, one-way information and communication. So, but when we collaborate, so when we actually collaborate and grow and enable, that's when we allow people to contribute, allow people to have this many-to-many, not trying to control it and not trying to steer it. And one of the examples that you may have seen during these days was a session, it's called SP378. It's about how you create these social portals and scenarios. And they're showing how you can build much more engaging user experience. So I'm going to give you guys a simple task. How many red dots do you see in this picture? So that was the task. So here's the question. And none of you can tell me that I didn't give you all the information because I gave everybody the same information. How many saw two? Three? There's a couple, so three, four, a few, five then. Anybody saw five? There's five. Six, sorry. I'm not able to count. Just checking if you're paying attention. Why did I show you this? Even though we have all the information, and even though I shared it with everybody the first time, you're not necessarily always able to. We very easily become focused on what people are asking us to look at, so we forget the bigger picture. So simple, it's 20 dots. Apparently, six of them are blue. And just because I ask you to focus on one specific thing, you are focusing only on that. And again, that's a lot of the coming back to the thing about tools. And what I really would want people to try to stop thinking about, should I choose one thing or should I choose the other thing? It's about what do you want to achieve? What is the need? What do you really want to achieve in your company? And there is different ways of looking at that. Inside Microsoft, we do have a lot of different models. And one of them is these end-user scenarios. We're looking at certain things that we think that the end user would like to achieve. This is just some of those examples, but it's making an announcement, tagging content, sharing content with somebody else, creating a meeting, having a meeting. So There are a lot of different things that you want to achieve. And there's definitely not one tool that handles all of these. And this is just 16 or 17 different things that you can do inside your company. So instead of thinking about and focusing about just one tool and one thing that we would like to achieve with, or not even what we would like to achieve, we're so focused on that specific tool that we end up thinking more about that than thinking about what we like to achieve. Most cases I'm working with, I work with a lot of global companies, there's a challenge with, you cannot move that document from A to B. It's in Nigeria, or it's in Saudi Arabia, or it's in Russia, so we're not allowed to share it with anybody else. Or we're not allowed to store it outside that place. And my background is from search. I joined Microsoft through the acquisition of Fast, so I like search, obviously. And the question is, for instance, is having an index centrally, is that moving the content? And the honest answer is nobody knows. I asked so many lawyers, and nobody has a clue. Nobody really been able to look down into all these retention policies and compliance and all these different things that you want to do and can answer that straightforward. But they have this perception. So we need to step back a little bit and try to figure out what is the real need? What is it that we really would like to do? And obviously, we cannot make a tool for every single thing that you want to do. We need to try to look at this in the context of maybe something bigger. Maybe you have some buckets you can fill this into. Maybe there's a way that we can try to look at these things in a better way. But I think one of the messages that's been done so far on this conference is that, you know, we need to try to, what if we could actually work like a network? What if we can take the way that we are, which is natural to us in the way that we work, and apply that to the way that we are supporting the business as well? So let me take an example for you. There is a company in Norway, it's a global company, they call it DNV GL. They just did a merger with GL, so now they're DNV and GL. Used to be about 10,000 people. Now they're 16,500 globally. They are working with certification compliance of ships and building new stuff, and then you need to make sure that it's not sinking and stuff like that. So you need to follow certain rules. Katrine Sundby, she's been the program manager for digital channels there for the last 4 or 5 years. She would love to be here, and I'm presenting for her when it comes to their customer case. But they've done an amazing job when it comes to enabling the end users in how they work. So this specific case that they're talking about is called Yammer, the global coffee machine chat. And the whole concept behind this is that what if we can introduce a way for people to interact in the same way they would do when they're meeting at the coffee machine? So it's not that often that you would go to the CEO in your company and just knock on the door and say, hey, can I talk to you? But if you accidentally meet that person by the coffee machine, well, maybe you'll be looking into the ground and kind of embarrassed. I know who you are. Do you know who I am? Kind of thing. But once that's over and you're complaining about the weather or that the coffee in the coffee machine doesn't taste the way it should do, you're actually able to have some sort of dialogue and conversation. And that was their whole idea behind introducing this global coffee machine, was that they wanted to create that sort of meeting place where they were able to actually break down some of those barriers. So, as I said, they're a company, they're about 16,500 people. Their vision is to create one global workplace where they can access information and experts, reuse experience information across all the boundaries. And what they have done in this example is that they created what they call a virtual workplace. Now, I introduced this customer by saying Yammer, the global coffee machine. But as you can see here, the coffee machine is just one of these elements. So basically what they decided to do from the communication point of view was that they wanted to sort of try to stop talking about the tools and rather start talking about what do they really want to achieve. What is it that you do? You're sitting at your desk. What do you do at your desk? Well, I'm going to probably have my stuff, my site, my documents in OneDrive. That's where I'm going to share. That's where I'm going to put those things. If I want to call somebody and talk to my neighbor, I'm probably going to go and visit that person. So I'm going to go to that person's OneDrive or that person's my site and share what we're doing there. If I want to send them a message, I'm going to use an email. Unless it's just something informal, I'm going to use Yammer or I'm going to use Link. They have their conference rooms where they're using Link. They have their business lounges. So they're trying to sort of build scenarios and stories that are help people understanding that this is not about technology. This is about changing the way you work and actually adapting technology to what's natural for you as end users. And you can see, of course, they have this big thing in the middle as well, which I love that they have there. It's this research assistant, which basically means that they have the enterprise search and bring all the content in there so that they can use that as well. But in this case, we're going to talk about the coffee machine and what they actually did there and about their evolution on Yammer, because I know everybody's going to like that as well. So they had this hypothetical question. They're a global company. 1,500 people in that company actually lives and works in Asia. So how much would it cost for them to actually bring 1,500 people to Oslo, meet the management, and have a dialogue? And how effective would it actually be as well? So what they decided was that they were going to create this challenge instead. Let's see how we can utilize Yammer to actually create that informal meeting and gather a lot of information and ideas in there. And about a year ago, they actually did this. On my slide now, it just says result, because they didn't want me to publish in writing everything what they actually did and their success stories and the feedback from the employees. But when they did the mentoring, when they checked the sentiment of what people thought, which was just positive feedback. They had 700 people attending for 4 hours. They had thousands of discussions. They had a lot of different ideas that came up. That grew into a lot of ideas that the management actually took further. And the general perception was very positive. But what they also managed to do was to say, well, if we can do this with APAC, let's do it another place as well. So they started this internal competition, which has really managed to help them drive the use of Yammer as what they call their local coffee machine. So this is the revolution, or this is how they actually developed the Yammer experience. So what? It's kind of funny, though. So they started by having this viral thing working around in the organization. They had about 1,000 users, or a little bit less than 1,000 users, before suddenly somebody posted something really stupid, which caught the management attention. So, I mean, all of us understand you're not going to put some stupid pictures on the internet. You're not going to, well, I'm not even going to say it. You understand what I mean. But somebody here didn't really get that point. And what happened was that the management got attention on this, and they said, wow, this is a big problem. What do? Do we turn it off? Or do we try to see how it incorporates with our corporate strategy? And they had 1,000 users already without having any effort in getting it in. So they kind of understood that this could probably bring a lot of value to the business. So they decided to incorporate it as a part of their global strategy. And as you saw, the virtual workplace where they had this coffee machine, so they decided this is a good place for us to do this. They actually told people, do not store documents there. But people don't care, so they still store documents there. And then as they had a dialogue with us and they realized that we're actually looking at the documents, will actually be stored in OneDrive, and there will be some, we have a roadmap that actually aligns. So they didn't want to stop it. They just said, okay, let's do it. People kind of understood from the first thing that they don't really want to do the stupid thing. So it grew really quickly. And as you can see, it grew to 4,000 users or so in the middle of or early 2011. Now they did they had this process of making sure every night they did an active directory sync to make sure that people that quit got deleted from the system. And that was a desktop that was on somebody's desk. And if that desktop was turned off or not connected to the internet, it checked if there was any users. And if there were no users available in the new active directory, they actually deleted all the users. So that's what happened here. Mike Rapham in Microsoft, he came through Yammer acquisition. He knows this very well because he worked with them. And he was sweating for a long time when this happened. They turned it off and obviously restored both the users and the trust. As you can see, it took longer time to restore the trust than it took to restore the users. But they shared it and they admitted that this was a mistake and fixed it. And it grew over time. And as you can see, what they'd done, they had a merger back in early 2012 with 1,500 new people in the Netherlands, and it grew strong then as well. And then when they did the last merger now, they added another 6,000 people in, and they're actually currently on more than 10,000 users with the number of messages going there and the new members. It's amazing. So it's really, to my point, a success story. And if Katrine was here, you could be allowed to clap, but it's not my story, so we'll just continue. So what they use it for is that they use it for all-hands meetings, dialogue between management and employees. They use it when they have brainstorming, starting up new ideas, find competency, but more in the sense of asking the network, not so much in the searching, because as you know, they have the research assistant as well. And they have the share ideas and information and a lot more things as well. But what they wanted to share as well here, what did they do right? So it was a part of their overall communication strategy, at least once they found that this was existing in the company. And they made it. They had HR as a huge sponsor. They were standing in front of this and telling everybody, this is what we want you to use. We know that 1,000 of you are already using it. They encouraged you to use it. They didn't tell you have to use it. They told it, it's here. 1,000 people use it. They have very successful experience. Why don't you try to use it as well? They provided training. And a couple of slides from now, I'm going to share a video that they did so that people could kind of understand what it was all about. And they tried to facilitate rather than put a lot of rules. One of the things that they saw, so obviously, this is a sort of like a heat map looking at all the messages that are being sent between the different countries and subsidiaries. Just took a dump of all the messages with where they started and originated and ended. And as you can see, that there is a lot of messages. One thing that's pretty interesting on this picture is that one of the biggest offices they have is in Milan. And there is only like one or two small lines there. Because the management in Milan said that this is just crap, don't use it. Just gonna blow away. So there's hardly anyone using there. So that's, there is also see how important it is that you have that sponsorship, that you have those that actually are executive sponsor for what you want to do. Now I'm gonna switch one forward, and that's when they did the acquisition in the Netherlands. So you can see they're bringing in a new company and they feel like they're part of that DNV already. And the number of messages grows a lot to the Netherlands. Unfortunately, Milan is still almost nothing. So for them, the value is that they have been able to provide a place with a shorter distance between the management and the employees. And they've been able to have some really successful results when it comes to doing these mergers over the last couple of years and growing from about 8,000 people to 16,000 people in 2 years. That's 100% growth. And people feel like they're included when they do the service internally in the company. So that's pretty amazing results. And what I wanted to share with you, which I think is really good as an example of how they do this learning inside a company. So what do they do actually in order to for people to see this? And the video is available on YouTube as well. But I'll make the link available for everybody. So we're going to use the next 2 minutes to look at this video.
Hexagon Wrench walked the earth with a rain cloud over his head. He never smiled or laughed. Hexagon Wrench was not a happy man. One day, Hexagon came to work. He noticed that his colleagues smiled as though they were sharing a secret. Hexagon hated secrets. His computer confirmed his suspicion. They were having one of those dreaded staff meetings. Hexagon watched the meeting from his favorite spot. The others talked about communities, sharing. Nonsense. For him, all that mattered was the big problem. It was going to define his career, if he could only solve it. But suddenly, a voice spoke to him. Mr. Wrench, you've got 8,500 talented colleagues. Why don't you see whether one of them can help you? Come on! Finally, Hexagon logged on, described the big problem, and got a reply from a colleague in India.
Ooh.
They chatted. She was smart. She was funny. And she was right. Hexagon still remained a pretty grumpy guy. But he met some new people, got some answers, even answered a few questions, which was pretty cool. And once in a while, when he thought nobody was looking, his lips sort of twisted. It wasn't exactly a smile, but it was a start. So, next time you've got a challenge, do what Hexagon did. You might end up with far more than a solution.
So that's pretty good, isn't it? Again, I can't take credit for it, unfortunately, but I'm really amazed. I think they've done a great job, and I think that that's something that everybody can learn from when it comes to, you know, how do you build confidence? How do you make your organization actually believe in the stuff that you're doing? Nobody told her, you have to do this. They actually told, try it out what they did. And they made it kind of harmless and innocent in a way. So what we talked about now is a little bit of the background, knowledge management, collaboration, as well as sort of the flaws in just thinking about the tools. So let's talk a little bit about solutions. And, well, I just brought this one, but the problem is if you always get one solution, you always also, or one tool, you're always going to see the same problem. So we want to try to challenge ourselves in how we're thinking and how we're approaching the problems. Usually, and I said we've been working with a lot of companies around the world, and usually when we're trying to introduce a new enterprise search solution, which is what I've been doing for the last 6 years before my new role, everybody tells me the one we have really, really sucks. We want something else. So we spend a lot of time doing the envisioning. We spend a lot of time trying to help them understand the value, create a roadmap. And then we come to the implementation, and they tell us, well, we want to replace this thing we have with what you got, but don't change anything. And I'm just saying, so why am I here? Well, you know, we don't want to confuse the users. Okay? So don't spend any money on us. I mean, we have the best search engine in the world, but not if you're going to use it like that. If you're used to pushing your car in front of you, it doesn't help if you have a newer and better car. It's probably going to be working just as bad when you're pushing that in front of you. So we really need to step out of our comfort zone. Most of the things that is going to make it better means that we need to do something that is a change. And change hurts. So we need to try to work on that and help drive that transformation. So I've been to the last three SharePoint conferences. And I remember when we did the 2010, and it was on-premises, and everybody was complaining, why doesn't it come more often? Why does it take 3 years between each cycle? Why do I have to do all these upgrades on my infrastructure? I would wish that you could take more responsibility for doing this and drive us going forward. So the next one, we say, now we're doing all in with cloud. And there's a, oh, hey, wait, we don't want to go that way. Okay. So good thing this year is it seems like it's building confidence. And we're growing. We're getting there. When I say we, I think I'm talking about the customers as well as obviously the solution. But cloud's been around now for about 8 years, I think, from Microsoft. And really, we want to help everybody move forward. And I'm very pleased to see that a lot of large companies do see the value of getting to that platform. And instead of using all the money in making sure you have your infrastructure, they can use all their money on creating great solutions for the end users instead. And I think that's some of the tools that we are providing now and hopefully can look at going forward as well. So for me, when people ask, again, going back to this same SharePoint or Yammer question, I'm going to ask you another question. Pizza or airplane? And you expect me to answer the first one, SharePoint or Yammer, without any more context. So it's just as easy as answering this question without any context. So I don't know. If you're hungry, you probably should do a pizza. If you want to go somewhere, you should probably use a plane. If you want to go to Italy and eat pizza, you should use both of them. So I mean, it's kind of like, how do you want this to work for you? How do you want to build the solutions, and how do you want to work? Traditionally, we have this enterprise structure where we have these organizational silos. We have HR, they're doing their stuff. We have sales doing their stuff and services doing their stuff. But there's these tight walls between each of the departments, and they're not really collaborating. But if we want to achieve something, we need to build solution that works across here. If you're hiring somebody to your organization, you need to work with HR, but HR need to work with you as well. They need to understand what you want to achieve. From a services organization, you need a specific type of roles. So they need to collaborate and need to talk to each other. And we need to build solutions that are tailored across this as well, not the old file server structure where we have, here is HR and here are all the documents. And by the way, don't look at this catalog because that's where all people's paychecks are. So that's bad. So you need to be some more flexible in the way that you're creating stuff. And when it comes to building solutions, your expectations is that it needs to be seamless, or the end user's expectations is that it needs to be seamless. It's just not, it shouldn't be another tool. So I already have enough tools. I get 250 emails every day. I don't want another place where I get even more messages. It has to be some sort of benefit of going there. It needs to be contextual in the context of what I'm actually doing, and I think a lot of you, when you saw the office graph and what we're being done around there, it's really amazing to see that it's actually how contextual it is. And when we're starting to talk to partners now and trying to envisioning what kind of solutions in a customer, what kind of solutions can you really build on top here? So I'm from services, and this is just amazing. All the opportunities, all the value we can build when we're trying to, when we can start thinking about making this contextual and insightful for our end users. So I'm going to go one step back, and I'm going to share my conceptual architecture, which is very simple. I'm a finance guy, business, not technical guy at all. So I forgot to tell all of you guys, I'm not going to do any coding today. So if you have that expectation, this is really bad. But I talked a little bit about the different things and end-user scenarios and things you'd like to achieve. And then I had these boxes below where I said, let's try to group them a little bit. And what I tried to do here is just to group them into different contexts which might kind of relate to our technology. I'm not making any clear sort of thing, but you do have things in your organization which goes to building portals, learning portals, you have news, you have product information. There is a lot of other things which is on an organizational level. Then you have communities or groups. We do have a lot of communities. We have communities in SharePoint and we have communities in Yammer. And we're seeing that these two are sort of merging now and starting to work together. We have a lot of IP. We need to share that, we need to use it, and we need to evolve that. We have projects, obviously. A lot of different things happening around projects. We have my personal stuff that I like to deal with, and a lot of other stuff. So just imagine this being all the tools you have. And I'm not talking about what I can do with each of the tools, but then I have these layers. I have, of course, I need to make sure it's compliant. We need to follow e-discovery rules and ECM, and we need to make sure that we want to get deleted, what should be deleted. We want to create analytics on top of it and make sure that people that are not supposed to see it doesn't see it and all these different things. We want to aggregate it and create a good search experience. And we want to have an access layer so that regardless of whether we do it on our browser or desktop or mobile, we want to have access to all of that content. So that's the conceptual view. Now, imagine that we have all of these things, that we have all those building blocks inside our organization. What do we do now? We want to build solutions. We want to help them gather the necessary information and knowledge depending on where they are. So let me come up with an example here. A guy called Eric Van Oom, who is working with us, done this overview, and this is based on what we call an innovation hub that we have created. And basically, imagine you log on in your innovation management hub, and there you have on your left-hand side your favorites, your favorite things that you're working with. You have any ideas. It could be a SharePoint list. People throw in their ideas in a SharePoint list and bring that up. And what we do here is just surface that in one view. You can see that what we've done in the middle here, we have the sentiments. So we just use NetBreeze to look at LinkedIn and other sources to see what's the sentiment out there. We do have people using the Oslo graph and the office graph and pulling out the relevant people to that context into what we're seeing here and displaying it. Now, obviously, we need that API to pull that out and these kind of things, but that's what you got. Don't know if some of you saw just the keynote with the Windows 8 application, then Jem and Ashok did a presentation on the browser experience as well, showing you that this is really about a platform enabling. It's not an application, it's a platform. It's the Office Graph and everything that you're enabling by doing that. And then you can bring in the Yammer feed. So here you basically see that Yammer is brought in, people is brought in, information is brought in, and we're also bringing in third parties. So we're building solutions across. And the same with sentiment. As I said, we can build sentiments when looking at this. So trying to capture what's happening in the market. This is just an example where you're bringing in content from Facebook and YouTube and news and Twitter and so on. NetBreeze bringing that up, displaying it through their APIs, showing you. We have social feeds from Twitter, bringing all of this content in. So creating solutions that are contextual. And of course, when you see trends, this is kind of like a dashboard helping you to monitor what's happening. You see trends and you get a good idea, you should be able to submit it, bringing that back in as well. And of course, you have the regular Yammer experience. So this is kind of just examples. So if you think about the conceptual architecture that I provided here and that I shared with you guys here. And what did I do? I built a solution on top where I used components from my infrastructure, whether it's Microsoft technology or other legacy other systems or legacy content. What I did is I'm bringing all of these things together and providing solutions for the end users. And this can be one example. I mean, there's probably nothing right with this one. This is just an example. I could put the yellow boxes wherever I wanted to. I'm not building a solution for you guys. I'm just trying to share the concept of how do I bring knowledge in? How do I manage my knowledge and bring that in and share it with the rest of the organization through solutions? Another example can be marketing. And for the purpose of this person, what I'm showing you here now is just saying you have all of these building blocks inside your organization, and you can build solution across by enabling different building, different parts of your solutions. But it's the same thing. You don't want to build one solution to that is sort of like end-to-end. That's isolated here, and this other thing is isolated here. It's really about how you're working together in the overall organization. And that's what I'm trying to come to here. And of course, you have a lot more. And this is the only thing that was really stopping you here is your imagination and working with the business and figuring out where can I create value? How can I create value on top of all the information and all the knowledge I have inside the organization? So don't you do that just for show. This is a folly. That's something they built in the 18th century in the UK. Usually it's just a building or something to show off that you've done something. So this is called Broadway Tower, actually, built in 1799. This was, people actually lived inside this one. But a lot of these were just empty or filled with stone inside, and they built all of these buildings to show off that they have money, or show off that they were able to do one specific thing, which probably is good, but doesn't bring a lot of value into the company. I know a lot of people likes big paintings, and they say that as well, and that has a purpose because it's purpose to just show off. But when you want to do the technology inside a company, or because you have a passion, not just to show off, but when you do something inside a company, it's usually because you want to drive value. You want to drive your business. You want to help enable your business to go in a specific direction. So the things you do is not just for show. You really do this to create some sort of value. And one of the things I try to say, and it's not just about technology. So this one is from Gartner. But if you're looking at this, it's really about changing the way that you work, changing the cultures. You need to have the technology there in order to do something, obviously. But then you need to change how you're working. Adoption and changing your company is a key thing for success. So I brought this. I have this three times. I actually like that slide. So from this session, before we're opening up for if anybody has any questions or comments, I tried to say that address the business challenge and moving from one-to-one solutions, from point tools to more in a situation where you work like a network and create solutions on top of what you got and enablement instead. Leverage all the technologies. So this is not about SharePoint or Yammer. It's about how do you bring those two together and how do you enable through a lot of the companies I work with, they have, well, we have 70,000 using Yammer and we have 40,000 using SharePoint. What should I choose? Why do you have to choose? Create good solutions on top. The community that's active on Yammer, let them be active there. Make sure that you're tying these things together in a good way so that people are able to find it regardless of if it's one place or the other. If you're talking about Microsoft's strategy around enterprise social, obviously it's Yammer. So I'm not going to argue that. But this is about knowledge management, how you work as a customer. That's across all of those things. It's not just one tool that works out well. And it's not just about technology. It's about changing the way we work. So Before we take any questions, my good friend and colleague, Thomas, he's always saying when you have these sessions, remember to go in and do evals, and 5 is the benchmark. If you're unhappy, come to me and beat me up instead, or ask me a question and clarify, but please also remember to do the evals. And I hope that you had some sort of insights from this session, and I think there is a microphone there for people who want to ask questions, and thank you for everybody to being here as well.